During our return journey, I could see by Holmes' face that he was much puzzled by something which he had observed. Every now and then, by an effort, he would throw off the impression and talk as if the matter were clear. But then his doubts would settle down upon him again, and his knitted brows and abstracted eyes would show that his thoughts had gone back once more to the great dining-room of the Abbey Grange, in which this midnight tragedy had been enacted. At last, by a sudden impulse, just as our train was crawling out of a suburban station, he sprang on to the platform and pulled me out after him. "Excuse me, my dear fellow," said he, as we watched the rear carriages of our train disappearing round a curve. "I'm sorry to make you the victim of what may seem a mere whim, but on my life, Watson, I simply can't leave that case in this condition. Every instinct that I possess cries out against it. It's wrong. It's all wrong. I'll swear that it's wrong. And yet, the lady's story was complete. The maid's corroboration was sufficient. The detail was fairly exact. What have I to put up against that? 3 wine glasses, that is all. But if I had not taken things for granted, if I had examined everything with the care which I should have shown had we approached the case de novo and had no cut-and-dried story to warp my mind, should I not then have found something more definite to go upon? Of course I should. Sit down on this bench, Watson, until the train for Chislehurst arrives, and allow me to lay the evidence before you, imploring you in the first instance to dismiss from your mind the idea that anything which the maid or her mistress may have said must necessarily be true. The lady's charming personality must not be permitted to warp our judgment. Surely there are details in her story which, if we looked at in cold blood, would excite our suspicion. These burglars made a considerable haul at Sydenham a fortnight ago. Some account of them and of their appearance was in the papers, and would naturally occur to anyone who wished to invent a story in which imaginary robbers should play a part. As a matter of fact, burglars who have done a good stroke of business are, as a rule, only too glad to enjoy the proceeds in peace and quiet without embarking on another perilous undertaking. Again, it is unusual for burglars to operate at so early an hour. It is unusual for burglars to strike a lady to prevent her screaming, since one would imagine that was the sure way to make her scream. It is unusual for them to commit murder when their numbers are sufficient to overpower one man. It is unusual for them to be content with a limited plunder when there was much more within their reach. And finally, I should say, that it was very unusual for such men to leave a bottle half empty. How do all these unusuals strike you, Watson?
Their cumulative effect is certainly considerable, and yet each of them is quite possible in itself. The most unusual thing of all, as it seems to me, is that the lady should be tied to the chair.
Well, I'm not so clear about that, Watson, for it is evident that they must either kill her or else secure her in such a way that she could not give immediate notice of their escape. But at any rate, I have shown, have I not, that there is a certain element of improbability about the lady's story. And now, on the top of this, comes the incident of the wine glasses.
What about the wine glasses?
Can you see them in your mind's eye?
I see them clearly.
We are told that 3 men drank from them. Does that strike you as likely?
Why not? There was wine in each glass.
Exactly. But there were bees' wing only in one glass. You must have noticed that fact. What does that suggest to your mind?
The last glass filled would be most likely to contain bees' wing.
Not at all. The bottle was full of it, and it is inconceivable that the first 2 glasses were clear and the 3rd heavily charged with it. There are 2 possible explanations, and only 2. One is that after the 2nd glass was filled, the bottle was violently agitated, and so the 3rd glass received the bees' wing. That does not appear probable.
No, I'm sure that I am right. What, then, do you suppose?
That only 2 glasses were used, and that the dregs of both were poured into a 3rd glass, so as to give the false impression that 3 people had been here. In that way, all the bees' wing would be in the last glass, would it not?
Yes, I am convinced that this is so.
But if I have hit upon the true explanation of this one small phenomenon, then in an instant the case rises from the commonplace to the exceedingly remarkable, for it can only mean that Lady Brackenstall and her maid have deliberately lied to us, that not one word of their story is to be believed, that they have some very strong reason for covering the real criminal, and that we must construct our case for ourselves without any help from them. That is the mission which now lies before us, and here, Watson, is the Sydenham train. The household at the Abbey Grange were much surprised at our return, but Sherlock Holmes, finding that Stanley Hopkins had gone off to report to headquarters, took possession of the dining-room, locked the door upon the inside, and devoted himself for 2 hours to one of those minute and laborious investigations which form the solid basis on which his brilliant edifices of deduction were reared. Seated in the corner, like an interested student who observes the demonstration of his professor, I followed every step of that remarkable research. The window, the curtains, the carpet, the chair, the rope, each in turn was minutely examined and duly pondered. The body of the unfortunate baronet had been removed, and all else remained as we had seen it in the morning. Finally, to my astonishment, Holmes climbed up onto the massive mantelpiece. Far above his head hung the few inches of red cord which were still attached to the wire. For a long time he gazed upward at it, and then, in an attempt to get nearer to it, he rested his knee upon a wooden bracket on the wall. This brought his hand within a few inches of the broken end of the rope, but it was not this so much as the bracket itself which seemed to engage his attention. Finally, he sprang down with an ejaculation of satisfaction. "It's all right, Watson," said he. "We have got our case, one of the most remarkable in our collection. But, dear me, how slow-witted I have been, and how nearly I have committed the blunder of my lifetime. Now, I think that, with a few missing links, my chain is almost complete." "You have got your men?" "Man, Watson, man. Only one, but a very formidable person. Strong as a lion. Witness the blow that bent that poker. 6'3" in height, active as a squirrel, dexterous with his fingers. Finally, remarkably quick-witted, for this whole ingenious story is of his concoction. Yes, Watson, we have come upon the handiwork of a very remarkable individual. And yet, in that bell-rope, he had given us a clue which should not have left us a doubt."
"Where was the clue?"
"Well, if you were to pull down a bell-rope, Watson, where would you expect it to break? Surely at the spot where it is attached to the wire. Why should it break 3 inches from the top, as this one has done?"
"Because it is frayed there?"
"Exactly. This end, which we can examine, is frayed. He was cunning enough to do that with his knife. But the other end is not frayed. You could not observe that from here, but if you were on the mantelpiece, you would see that it is cut clean off without any mark of fraying whatever."
"You can reconstruct what occurred. The man needed the rope. He would not tear it down for fear of giving the alarm by ringing the bell. What did he do? He sprang up on the mantelpiece, could not quite reach it, put his knee on the bracket, you will see the impression in the dust, and so got his knife to bear upon the cord. I could not reach the place by at least 3 inches, from which I infer that he is at least 3 inches a bigger man than I. Look at that mark upon the seat of the oaken chair. What is it? Blood. Undoubtedly it is blood. This alone puts the lady's story out of court. If she was seated on the chair when the crime was done, how comes that mark? No, no. She was placed in the chair after the death of her husband. I'll wager that the black dress shows a corresponding mark to this. We have not yet met our Waterloo, Watson, but this is our Marengo, for it begins in defeat and ends in victory. I should like now to have a few words with the nurse Teresa. We must be wary for a while if we are to get the information which we want."